This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm David Berger. U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday directed American military airstrikes in eastern Syria against facilities belonging to what the Pentagon said were Iranian-backed militia in a calibrated response to recent rocket attacks against U.S. targets in Iraq. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said in a statement the strikes destroyed multiple facilities at a border control point used by a number of Iranian-backed militant groups, including Kataib Hezbollah and Kataib Saeed al-Shuhada. The February 15th rocket attacks on U.S. positions in Iraq were carried out as Washington and Tehran are looking for a way to return to the 2015 nuclear deal abandoned by former U.S. President Donald Trump. U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday had his first phone call as president with Saudi King Salman, promising he would work for bilateral ties as strong and transparent as possible, the White House said. The call came ahead of the expected release of a sensitive U.S. intelligence report on the 2018 murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. State Department spokesman Ned Price says there will be future conversations about how the United States will respond to the intelligence report into Khashoggi's murder.
I expect that we will be in a position before long to speak to steps to promote accountability going forward for this horrific crime.
The report is a declassified version of a top-secret assessment that sources say singles out the 85-year-old king's son, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, for approving the murder of Khashoggi in the kingdom's consulate in Istanbul. This is VOA News. President Joe Biden on Thursday celebrated 50 million COVID-19 vaccines administered since he took office, saying the rollout is weeks ahead of schedule, but warning Americans not to become complacent. AP's Sagar Meghani reports.
The president says America is halfway to his goal of administering 100 million vaccine shots in his first 100 days.
50 million shots.
Saying that's weeks ahead of schedule on just his 37th day in office.
This is not a victory lap. Everything is not fixed.
As virus variants spread, virus cases could go back up. And this is not the time for Americans to relax. The president says they need to keep washing hands and keeping their distance.
And for God's sake, wear a mask.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has loosened some of the controls on the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
The Food and Drug Administration will now allow shipments of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine at standard freezer temperatures. Until now, ultra-cold temperatures from minus 76 degrees to minus 112 degrees Fahrenheit were required for shipments and storage of the frozen Pfizer vaccine vials. The FDA says it has reviewed new data from New York-based Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech. Based on the new information, the FDA says the Pfizer vaccine can now be transported and stored for up to 2 weeks at temperatures of freezers commonly found in pharmacies. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Pakistan and India pledged Thursday to halt cross-border firing in the disputed region of Kashmir, promising to adhere to a 2003 accord that has largely been ignored. Reuters' Emer McCarthy reports.
The joint statement said both sides agreed for strict observance of all agreements, understandings, and cease firing along the line of control and all other sectors with effect from midnight 24th, 25th of February 2021. The return to a truce was settled by the two armies' director generals of military operations. There has been a significant increase in ceasefire violations since 2014, leading to nearly 300 civilian fatalities, according to a source in Pakistan's military. Since the start of the year, India has counted 591 violations by Pakistan.
That's Reuters' Emer McCarthy. Stocks took a beating on Wall Street on Thursday. The Dow dropped 1.75%. The S&P fell by 2.45%. The Nasdaq plummeted 3.52%. Visit voanews.com for more. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, February 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Post-election violence continued Thursday in Niger.
Since the proclamation of the result of this runoff election of the past Sunday, there were many violences here in Niamey, the capital of the Niger, and in other regions of Niger.
Zambia opposition parties form an alliance ahead of August presidential election. Amnesty International corroborates recent attacks on unarmed civilians in the Central African Republic. And tragedy mounts a graduation in Liberia's capital.
Our forensic team and our crime against person team visited the scene and established that the cause of death is associated with carbon monoxide as a result of a generator that was placed in the house.
And Ghanaian security shut down an LGBTQ plus community center. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Violent protests continue Thursday in Niger following Sunday's presidential runoff election. Supporters of losing candidate Mahamat Usman set buildings on fire and burned tires in the capital, Niamey. Two people have been killed so far and over 400 arrested. Journalist Abdul Razak in the capital, Niamey, says authorities are looking for opposition leader Hamad Amadou, who is said to be fueling the protest.
Since the proclamation of the result of this runoff election of the past Sunday, there were many violences here in Niamey, the capital of the Niger, and in other regions of Niger. Here in Niamey, on Tuesday and Wednesday, there were many violences. Some young people went out and burned some tires on the road, addressed barricades on many roads in Niamey. This Thursday, violences were not as many as the two past days. But what we can note for this Thursday is that the journalist Moussa Kaka, the Radio France international correspondent here in Niger, homes were targeted Thursday morning by some young boys in his neighborhood. They burned his house. But if we compare the violences of this Thursday to the past 2 days, today we can say that there were no many violences as the two past days.
What is the response of the authorities? What are they saying or doing about the violence?
This afternoon, the Minister of Interior, Alkash Alhada, were in front of the journalists to make a run-up of the situation. And he said that, of course, there were many violences here in Niamey, and they have many population of protestants, mostly some young boys. But the most important information that the Minister of the Interior gave is that it is Mr. Hama Amadou, the chief of the opposition, who were behind all these violences. And he said that Mr. Hama Amadou, they are looking for them in the city. Some say that Hama Amadou already go out of the country, Niger, but we don't have confirmation of this information, and they are looking for them to arrest him.
The person that came second in the election was Mahamat Usman. What is the role of Hama Amadou?
The role of Hama Amadou is that he is the main support of Mahamat Usman, and because even before the election, he said that if there is many fraud, they will contest the result. And because it's the reason that maybe the authorities say that he is the principal responsible of these protests in Niamey.
So, Abdul, Mahamat Usman, has he said anything about the protest?
Mahamat Usman didn't say anything up to now. We are talking about this protest, but he make a message in which he said that he is challenging the result, and he said that he is the winner of the election. He said that the vote was fraudulent and he will go to the Constitutional Court with evidences, but he didn't talk about violence. He didn't make a message to protest, yes.
He did not tell the protesters to stop.
No, he didn't say to the protesters to stop.
Abdul, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, James.
That was journalist Abdul Razak speaking with us in the Nigerian capital, Niamey. 11 opposition political parties in Zambia have decided to form an alliance ahead of that country's August 12, 2021 presidential election. It is called the UPND Alliance, named after main opposition United Party for National Development. The alliance will take on President Edgar Lungu and his ruling Patriotic Front Party. UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema says the alliance has asked him to be its presidential candidate and that he has accepted. However, on Thursday, one member of the new alliance, Chishimba Kambwile of the National Democratic Congress Party, disagreed with the choice of Hichilema as the alliance's sole presidential candidate. But his party expelled him and said it would stay with the new alliance. Charles Kakoma is a spokesperson for the main opposition United Party for National Development.
The opposition alliance decided to pick the president of my party, the United Party for National Development, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, as the presidential candidate. Of course, we now have come to learn that one of the political parties in the alliance, led by former Minister of Chishimba Kambwile, has disagreed with that decision, but it has also not gone very well with his own members of his political party. And today, the vice president, the secretary general, and the other senior members of the party decided to go into the alliance without him. They decided also to remove him as the president of their own political party. Dr. Kambwile has also decided to remove those that removed him. So quite some confusion. Overall, we are hoping that the alliance will stick together because generally, people think that we are stronger as a united force against the ruling party than going into the election as the fragmented and divided opposition political parties.
As you just said, Mr. Kakoma, Mr. Chishimba Kambwile has said that he does not agree with Hakainde Hichilema to be the leader. Did he say why he doesn't agree with that?
I think he also generally agrees that Mr. Hichilema should be the presidential candidate. But he has other sticking issues that he's bringing up. For example, he thinks that we must disband all our political parties and form one new political party, which other people have not agreed with. And he also thinks that each political party must fill the candidates in the name of their own parties rather than coming as one political force under the major political party, the United Party for National Development, led by Hakainde Hichilema.
So he doesn't agree with the fact that the new alliance should be called United Party for National Development.
Yes, the new alliance, well, in short, is a UPND alliance. But he wanted it to be called, according to what he said himself, that he wanted to be a new name called the United Rainbow Alliance. But basically, other political parties in the alliance have not agreed with his new proposals. We are just a few months away from the presidential and general election. And the changing names can confuse even the voters.
Are you sure that this experiment, this time around, will work?
No, it will work because the majority of those in the opposition alliance have already agreed to endorse Hakainde Hichilema as a presidential candidate. Yesterday, they held a press conference to declare and render their support for Hakainde Hichilema to be the sole presidential candidate for the opposition alliance.
Mr. Kakoma, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we do appreciate very much.
Thank you very much.
Charles Kakoma is spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development. He is speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. Liberian police say 8 persons, including 6 females and 2 males, died early Thursday from carbon monoxide poisoning in a house in Pinsville, a suburb of the capital, Monrovia, just hours following a graduation ceremony. Rita Julabwe has details from Monrovia.
The deceased included Nese Meda of February 24, 2021, University of Liberia graduate, along with seven members of her family. Their bodies were discovered Thursday morning. Residents of the area say their attentions were drawn to the home of their neighbor, whose doors were still locked after 10 a.m. on Thursday. Matthias Moba, who usually takes the late Nurse's case to school, says when he got to the house at 7 a.m., the house was still locked from inside. He says by 10 a.m., the situation remained the same, which prompted him to alert the next door neighbors.
I knocked on the window. There was no responding, no sound of shaking. I thought within myself that the up and down make the entire suit, you know, ready to get it. But later, I came back. So while I was sitting, the boy, she rented a cell phone. They came for their cell because due to town last night, they were not able to carry their cell. The motorbike boy told me, I don't think the people were ready to sleep. They go knock the door. When we started knocking the door, but nobody was making any move in the house. So later, we started to force it. When we went out the bathroom window was open. I spied you in there. I saw people lying down on the floor, calling them, but nobody can move.
Joetta Laike, who lives in the same house as Nancy but on the next floor, is the owner of the apartment which the late Nancy was renting. Laike says she and Moba were astonished when they burst the door open and discovered the lifeless bodies of eight persons.
We forcefully opened the door. The two boys and I were forcing the door to open it, enter, and then the person said, the heat off. I said, so from short breath, so I didn't go far. But the force from the heat, I came back outside. I had the other boy and myself cut the machine off. I said, me call her brother so the brother can walk in the house because I can't go there. When they entered the house, the other lady, body was still so. When they came out, I had friends that I knew now. The other boy right there yesterday, then I called him. I said, I got a situation at my house, so please call for central and ambulance to come. That's how he called. It is representing the ambulance and other people came. I had to hold the body out.
Alice Wu, a woman in her late 50s, was said to be among the eight dead persons. Joseph Koti, a son-in-law to the deceased, says his mother-in-law lived in Magibi, one of Liberia's 15 counties where she departed Wednesday for the graduation in Painesville.
One of our brothers, daughter, was graduating from LU. So she came to celebrate with a girl. The afternoon, the police call and say your mother left in the house where she won graduation party. The smoke entered the house. Eight persons died in that process. It took the body to ERW hospital.
A report from the Forensic Department of the Liberia National Police said the eight persons died because of carbon monoxide poisoning.
They were taken at the ELWA hospital where they were pronounced dead. Our forensic team and our crime against person team visited the scene and established that the cause of death is associated with carbon monoxide as a result of a generator that was placed in the house.
Carbon monoxide is an odorless, colorless, and tasteless gas that can cause a sudden illness and death. Death by carbon monoxide happens in Liberia a few times each year because some people prefer to keep generators in their homes. Rita Jrobwe for VOA News Liberia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, February 26th. Security personnel in Ghana have closed down a newly opened community center by an LGBTQ plus rights group in the capital after religious and political leaders campaigned against it. Members of the group called the closure a violation of the constitutional right to assemble. Kent Mensah reports from Accra.
An unarmed member of LGBT plus rights Ghana on Wednesday posted video on Twitter of what they said was a police raid on their community center.
There is police and there is a car. What are we going to do? Oh my God, you guys. This is getting really serious.
The center had been open since January 31 and was the first such gathering place for Ghana's LGBT plus community. After the police raid, the group's director, Alex Kofi Donkor, said the group will look at their legal options.
Our constitution guarantees all of us the right to freedom of association, right? So if government denies us this right, then I believe that there is also the legal recourse to which we can seek.
Ghana's police declined to comment on the alleged raid or why a police car was parked outside the center. The center had become a subject of debate when the European Union's delegation in Ghana posted on social media that it had taken part in the opening. Ghana's conservative and religious groups denounced the center and the EU's support for it. The Ghana Catholic Bishops' Conference said the EU should not impose their so-called values and beliefs on Ghanaians, who it said were against homosexuality. President of the conference, Reverend Philip Name, accused the LGBT plus community of using the center to try to lure in youth.
Our main concern is to engage the youth, especially those who are unemployed, with meaningful jobs. I think if they are doing something very positive, they will not attend to such activities as normal activities.
Gay sex is a criminal offense in Ghana and can be punished with up to 3 years in prison. Prosecutions are very rare, but members of the LGBT plus community say the colonial era law encourages discrimination that they face on a daily basis. Human Rights Watch, in a 2018 report, accused Ghana of abusing LGBT plus rights by keeping the law. Ghanaian human rights lawyer Joyce Opoku-Boateng argues consensual sex between adults should not be against the law.
As long as, you know, it doesn't involve children. But if an adult decides to do that, that's a choice the person has made, irrespective of whether society frowns upon it or not.
But Ghana's Minister Designate for Gender, Children and Social Protection, Sarah Adwoa-Safo, told Parliament on February 17 that the law will remain.
Our laws are clear on such practices. It makes it criminal. Section 104 of the Criminal Code prohibits one from having unnatural carnal knowledge with another person. So on the issue of its criminality, it is non-negotiable.
Meanwhile, members of Ghana's LGBT plus community feel like they are once again being punished to the margins of society. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra.
A recent investigation by Amnesty International provides images and witness testimony of multiple violent attacks on unarmed citizens in Central African Republic. In Bambari, where the town has been occupied by armed groups all year, there is fighting at religious sites in the east of the city. Abdoulaye Diarra, a researcher with Amnesty International, spoke to Ricky Stryak about an attack in mid-February that left at least 14 people dead and the impunity that he says increases this violence.
The footage shows the body of people believed to have been killed in the same day. A total of 14 corpses are visible on the ground, most of them partially or fully covered in tissue. For the visible part, the people were not wearing military uniforms. The video also made it possible to see in close-ups some of these corpses, including a woman and a child. An image showed that what Amnesty International has confirmed to be damage from the explosion of the weapon, as well as over damage visible on the ground and holes on the adjacent wall, corresponding to the result of the detonation of an ammunition producing fragments. A health center was also hit in Bambari. We do not have all the elements necessary to determine the legality or not of this attack.
Your report cites many instances of violence conducted on residents and on citizens. What kind of information have you guys been able to gather in terms of why these groups are attacking citizens and what are some of the reasons behind the crisis in general?
And what I can say is that the situation was already tense in Ka, and it worsened with this alliance which brought together groups that fought each other in 2013. Despite discussion before the election, these groups decide to contest the election for various reasons which are not clarified. We see in these acts above all the consequences of the climate of impunity that has reigned in the country and does not dissuade the actors from having recourse to armed violence to resolve political disputes.
Your report calls for the end of impunity for the people who are found to be committing these crimes and these acts of violence. What are the challenges, though, to bringing, quote, justice to these people and for these communities when CAR's formal infrastructure is quite weak? And, you know, what are some of the concrete things that need to be put in place to end impunity?
We published a report in October 2020. which analyzed the progress made at the level of a special criminal court and also behind the Central African Ordinary Courts. At that time, several judges had not yet been appointed, as well as the Register of the Special Criminal Court. Since then, the decree appointing judges have been promulgated. The court also benefits from the support from Central African partners like UNDP. We believe that the court has an important role to play in the fight against impunity, and it's important to continue providing support. Considering the number of cases in progress, it is important that ordinary court also to be supported. We saw that there was a lack of resources, especially in the interior of the country.
Officer Abdoulaye Diarra, a researcher with Amnesty International, he was speaking to Ricky Strayer from Dakar, Senegal. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with women's football, as Shilene Boysen, the new head coach of South Sudan's senior women's national team, the Bright Starlets, assumed duties after arriving in South Sudan on Wednesday. Boysen, who holds a CAF A license, was recently the performance analyst for South Africa's team at the 2020 Safa Women's Championship. The South African Boysen was given a 2-year contract. She spoke to my colleague James Batty on her new assignment.
Coach, first of all, congratulations on your appointment. Why did you accept to coach the South Sudan Women National Soccer Team?
I think it was a great opportunity for me to invest in African football. And when I was looking at what they wanted to do with their women's program, I felt like it was a perfect fit for both of us. I love to coach and teach. They want to grow, so yes, I think it was a perfect fit. And when you're talking about a relatively new country, but they are fully independent and they have come a long way. I'm happy to be here to help support and grow the program. Now it will be about building and sustaining.
We will be hearing more from Shilene Boysen in the days to come. In the meantime, Continental Women's Champions, the Super Falcons of Nigeria, are back in Nigeria after they kicked off the reign of American coach Randy Waldrum on an impressive note by winning the inaugural edition of the Festival Women's Trophy, otherwise known as the Turkish Women's Cup, in Antalya, Turkey. The Super Falcons won all their 3 matches at the 4-team invitational tournament held under strict COVID-19 protocols between February 17th and 23rd. In basketball news, Liz Mills, the first woman to coach a men's national basketball team in Kenya to the FIBA AfroBasket, has been speaking of her success after she led the Kenyan national basketball team to their first AfroBasket finals after a 28-year wait. Now back in Kenya after the AfroBasket qualifiers, the Australian revealed that she had deployed a digital coaching approach which paid off in their 74-73 upset of Africa basketball powerhouse Angola. She hopes her feat with the Kenyan men's national basketball team will open bigger doors for Kenyan women.
Hopefully we inspire young girls to dream of doing great things, be that in sport, finance, corporate, government, etc. So hopefully we've planted that seed and they feel inspired to do whatever they'd like.
And now to athletics, where the lawyers of South Africa's Caster Semenya said on Thursday that the 2-time Olympic champion is going to the European Court of Human Rights. The lawsuit is to challenge perceived discriminatory World Athletics regulations that prohibit her from competing in certain women's track events unless she medically lowers her naturally high testosterone levels. The 800 meters champion has already lost 2 legal appeals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.